From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm your host, Justin Spears, here with Michael Lev. We are covering some Arizona Wildcats football. Preseason practice is officially underway. Before we get started, make sure you download the Wildcaster app if you haven't already. Lev providing the best coverage of the U of A football team. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. Make sure you download it on the App Store and Google Play. And if you like this podcast, subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts and make sure you share it to all your friends as well. Lev, it's finally football season.
It is. How's it going, buddy?
It's going good.
Does it feel good to just kind of walk around out there on the practice field, watch guys banging into each other, running routes, tossing the football around? Do your juices get flowing?
I was worried that this summer would drag on a little bit, but now that we're here in late July and we're seeing guys, they weren't in full pads. They just had helmets on and they were wearing, you know, jerseys and pants. They weren't really in full pads, but it's football season, Lev. You went to Pac-12 Media Day. Arizona just wrapped up the first weekend of its preseason training camp, and now we're at the point right now where we're counting down the days until the season opener.
You can thank the schedule for that, right? Week zero pushed everything up a week. I can't sit here and say that I was fully ready to jump right into training camp 2 days mm-hmm. after Pac-12 Media Day, but it is what it is, mm-hmm. as they say. So off we go.
Lev, Arizona finished 5-7 last season. They didn't make a bowl game in Kevin Sumlin's first season at Arizona. Now Sumlin is entering year two. You kind of feel like everybody's more settled in. Everybody's more comfortable with each other. Did you get a sense of that when you talked to guys like Khalil Tate at Pac-12 Media Day?
There's no question that everyone kind of understands what the expectations are now. And Khalil's an interesting one to bring up because I don't think he fully understood what it meant to be a starting quarterback. Like, everything kind of came easy for him in 2017. And then all of a sudden, he has to learn a new system. He has to be the one who's leading the offseason, you know, player run practices, which was not the case heading into the 2017 season, right? Because Brandon Dawkins was still like kind of the guy, the older guy for sure. And Khalil was fighting for a spot. And I don't think he fully understood the investment that it takes to really truly be a leader, to truly be a starting quarterback. I mean, the talent is one thing, but you got to put in the time, right? That's what made like Peyton Manning such an incredible player, to use one example. Tom Brady, I mean, how much time do you think Tom Brady spends on his diet?
Studying.
His body, you know, studying opponents, like all that stuff outside of just the football stuff. So there's a lot that goes into it. I don't think that Khalil fully understood it. He's obviously plays the most important position on the team. I think there was just sort of maybe a sense of uncertainty a little bit. Jace Whitaker referenced that the other night, just saying how, you know, it's like you don't know if the coaches want you or not, which I thought was an interesting thing to say. Even though they retained the same defensive coordinator, you know, almost the entire staff shifted around. And yeah, there's a lot of that, like, you sort of have to prove yourself all over again. Plus, you know, Kevin and his staff came in late. Right, he was a late hire, maybe a full month, 6 weeks, even after kind of guys are normally hired around late November, early December. So they got a late start. So there were a lot of factors, and I think none of that stuff should come into play this year.
You know, Khalil Tate is an interesting guy because last year, the way things ended, we didn't know what was going to happen with Khalil Tate, right? You remember that little stretch where we had no idea what Khalil Tate was going to do? Was he going to go pro? Was he going to decide to transfer? I think there was a point during this offseason where Khalil Tate, and Lev, maybe you can confirm this, I think there was a point during the offseason where Khalil Tate really had a, just a moment where he really rehashed all of the things that happened this past year. And then he connected with Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzone. And all three of them pretty much came to the point where, hey, we didn't make a bowl game last season. We got some unfinished business to do. And if I want to become a pro prospect as a quarterback, I got to polish off some things and make this last year memorable.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. He talked a lot at Pac-12 Media Day and in spring as well about kind of how last year was a learning experience in a lot of ways. It was a lot of new stuff coming his way. He'd never been hyped up like that before. He'd never had an injury like the one he had before that affected his ability to move around and run and be the explosive
player. That ankle injury.
Yeah, that ankle injury he suffered in week two. And you know, he just talked about like failing a little bit, you know, which was, that was kind of a new experience for him as well. I mean, he didn't have a great deal of success as a true freshman, but no one expected him to, right? You're thrown in there as a 17-year-old coming off the bench against UCLA or whatever. But all of a sudden, after the year he had in 2017, that expectation level is way higher, exponentially higher. So, you know, you don't live up to that for a variety of reasons. You're taking criticism, really, probably for the first time in your career. And that's a lot to sort of deal with mentally. So I think it was a valuable experience for him in a lot of ways. I think I said in that story I wrote last week that it might have been the best thing that could happen to him. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a humbling experience. It was a learning experience. You know, he understands, as I said earlier, like what the level of commitment needs to be now. And so, you know, moving forward, it's just a matter of following through, you know, like, are you really going to take, if you've taken all those steps, how is that going to translate to your performance on the field? Mm. Right. Are we going to see, more efficiency? Are we going to see better leadership? Are we going to see better, you know, better passing in the red zone, which is something that we didn't talk about, I don't think, a lot during the season. But if you look at Arizona's touchdown percentage in the red zone, is among the worst in the Pac-12. They had among the most field goal attempts in the Pac-12, which is not really like a stat that you want to hang your hat on.
Which is crazy, because I can't imagine how bad it would be if Sean Poindexter never existed last year.
Right. But how many of those touchdowns to Sean were inside 20 yards or inside 10 yards? You know, not that many. It was a lot of
deep balls,
big plays. You know, there's no doubt that Khalil has a flair for the spectacular, right? I mean, those plays where he run around, chuck the ball down the field, hit a receiver, breaking away from the defense. Those are great, but you can't rely on that. That can't be your bread and butter. That has to be something that happens occasionally. You know, you have to make those third and seven, third and eight, whether you're scrambling for a first down or you're hitting that slot receiver or that tight end in a precise way. Those are the plays that they have to make. And as you know, when you get in the red zone, like, everything is condensed, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have that ability to throw the ball 60 yards down the field. That's where he really, to me, has to make a lot of gains for the offense to be more efficient. When you lead the Pac-12 in total yards, and yet your record is 5-7, like, something's wrong there, right? There's some sort of disconnect. They didn't turn the ball over like a crazy amount of times. I think they just need to be more efficient when they get near the end zone.
Arizona finished 92nd in the country in total defense last season, 10th in the Pac-12. Are those numbers correct? Look at your notebook. Yeah, 10th of the Pac-12.
I was just doing some research on this. Yeah.
Defense was bad.
It was, but okay, here's what's interesting. Okay. Here's what's interesting. They gave up in 2016, 469.3 yards per game. 2017, 471.2. Last year, 432. Okay. So that's almost 40 yards fewer per game, right? Points per game, 2016, 38.3. 2017, 34.4. 2018, 32.6. See where we're going here?
Mm-hmm.
That number's going down, right? Third down defense, which has been sort of the bane of their existence. 52.6% in 2016. 46.7% in 2017. 41.1% last year. Again, trending in the right direction. Now, just because they were better, quote unquote, doesn't mean that they were good. But at least the arrow is pointing up in all three of those very basic key statistics.
And do you think maybe a lot of fans should kind of ease up on Marcell Yates because he's entering year four? Or do you think Marcell Yates is on the hot seat?
No, he's totally on the hot seat because this is a performance-based business. And he would be the first to tell you that they haven't performed up to the standards that he expects. Like I said, like just because they were better doesn't mean that they were good. I mean, we're still talking about, you know, these rankings last year. They're all like 85th or worse in the country in points per game, yards per game, and third down percentage. 10th and 9th in the Pac-12 in those categories. So it's not good, but maybe it's an indicator that they're going to have that breakthrough this year. You know, I was on Pac-12 radio on Sirius XM this morning, and we were talking about the defense a little bit. And what I had said was there are a lot of parts that I like on this defense. If you just sort of look up and down the lineup, like Jalen Harris, J.B. Brown, Colin Schooler, Tony Fields, Jace Whitaker, Scotty Young, like you feel pretty good about these guys. They have a lot of experience. They've shown that they can make plays. It's a question of whether it all just kind of comes together.
When you look at the defensive side of the ball and you look at the first 2 days of practice, just from the little bits that we've seen, who is somebody that maybe passes the eye test? Somebody that I think a lot of Arizona fans should keep their eye on in 2019.
Right. You can't help but notice Trayvon Mason and Keon Bars. Two new defensive tackles. One, Keon arrived earlier this summer. Trayvon arrived last week. that is a problem. You know, there was some stuff with his transcripts and all that that took a while for him to gain NCAA clearance. And he's clearly not like in game shape or close to it. So he's going to have to work through that. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt along the way and they can get him to the point where he can be part of a rotation. I do not envision anyone playing as much as PJ Johnson and Derek Bowles did last year at defensive tackle. I could see it almost being 50-50, between whatever the first unit is and the second unit. We think the first unit is going to be, Fintan Connolly and Miles Tapasoa. But it's nice to have a couple guys who do look the part behind them in Mason and Bars. Trayvon Mason's listed at 6'4", 285. He looks bigger than that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He looks like he might be like maybe 6'6", 300. And, you know, Keon Bars for a freshman, I mean, he's thick.
I was right? Really surprised when we walked in and I saw number 92 and I had to double check the roster. I was like, who's that guy?
Right.
And it was Keon Bars.
He looked stout. I mean, it remains to be seen once the pads go on, you know, what these guys are going to look like when you're facing, you know, Division I caliber offensive linemen and schemes, in practice, in games. It's often a different story. You kind of find out who's ready and who's not. But, you know, not to pick on guys, but like the opposite end of that, like Quabena Watson, he's around 210, 211 pounds. When you look at him, like when I looked at him, I was like, oh, this is Jalen Harris from 3 years ago. Like it's going to take a while for him to build up his body to the level it needs to be. Darian Clark, a linebacker whom Colin Schooler praised for, you know, being in the film room a lot, and that all that's good. He's also in that 210, 212 pound range right now, which just isn't big enough to really be a significant contributor as a freshman. Again, I'm not trying to knock these guys. It's just
the way it is.
It's just the way it is for a lot of freshmen coming in here. Like you don't expect, especially guys who are, you know, close to the trenches, to necessarily, you know, be big enough and strong enough to play right away. That's why the majority of the time, like offensive linemen will redshirt because they're just not physically ready to play, you know, Division I football. So, I think I don't know if it was you I was talking to about this. Maybe it was, but I feel like if you hit 50%.
Yeah.
It was, right? 50% of your recruits, your JUCOs, your overall recruits, you're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they brought in what, 4 offensive linemen and 4 defensive linemen? Or defensive tackles, I should say, in this class. If they can hit on half of those, you're doing pretty well. I like the fact that they brought in a bulk, you know, bulk supply of both because it was badly needed.
And the size is there. Lev, I mean, you can attest to this. Think about over the last 3 years. I don't really recall Arizona being that big. Even last year when we came out to practice and we saw the size, I looked around and thought, I don't think there's any way that these guys even compete for a Pac-12 just based on their size. Now they have size. Now it's all a matter of getting them into game shape and getting them ready because Kevin Sumlin even said this day one. Said, you saw us last year, right? When he was asked about size and bringing in these junior college guys, said, you saw us last year, right? No, we need these guys to be ready to go. But, you know, if we're talking about size and guys that really pass the eye test, even though he's not a newcomer, Jalen Harris that you just mentioned, he added on about 20, 25 pounds, since the season ended, correct?
Yeah. If you look at, if you go back and look at the 2018 roster, which is basically set right around this time, and you look at the 2019 roster, he weighed 230 pounds when they checked in last late July or early August. Now he's at 250. He also gained an inch of height.
Mama's mac and cheese.
From 6'4", yeah. From 6'4 to 6'5". And there's a handful of guys on the team who actually got a little bit taller, which can happen. But that's been the kind of the goal for Jalen, like, throughout his time here, is just get the weight up, right? Because he has everything else. He's got length.
He's
got
long.
Quickness. He's got speed. He's got the bloodlines. He's got the work ethic, the desire, all of those things. You just need to get stronger. And he was the toughest guy for them to block in the spring game. And hopefully we'll see more of that. Like, he and J.B. Brown, to me, I mean, those guys have to emerge this year and be those disruptive pass rushers, whether J.B. is playing outside or inside in those situations. I was looking and searching and surfing, trying to find some website that breaks down third down defense by distance. I couldn't do it. I don't have time today to go through every single play-by-play. But we all saw it last year. It was all those third and long situations that would just drive you, third and medium, third and long, just drive you completely crazy when they would surrender first downs. You know, that's the situation you want to put the offense in, right? You want to put them in third and medium, third and long. And to give up first downs in those situations, it's extremely demoralizing. I feel like it's like takes the air out of the stadium if you're at home, especially. So it's up to those young pass rushers, you know, to get home and get sacks or knock down passes or whatever to get the offense off the field and get Khalil Tate and JJ Taylor on the field.
Still sticking on the defensive side of the ball, though. We talked to Marcel Yates Saturday night at the indoor practice facility, and I asked him. Jackson Turner, the incoming freshman, because on the roster, he's listed as a cornerback. And then I asked Marcel Yates, well, Jackson Turner, is he a cornerback? And then he said, no, Jackson Turner is a safety. And we do that based off of body type. You know, Coach Martin has enough cornerbacks already. We need some guys to play safety. And I thought that was weird because last year, I remember going and checking out the cornerbacks. And there were only about four or five guys out there. I mean, they were pretty slim at cornerback this last year. But this season, they got a batch of cornerbacks. Some are new. We've heard about Bobby Wolf, who they call Hollywood, a nickname that his tattoo artist chose, according to Jace Whitaker, because he's got it tatted on his back.
Bobby chose
Hollywood.
Told him to do that. But yeah, that's a good story, though.
But you have Jace Whitaker, Lorenzo Burns, and then you also have, you know, guys like Christian Young, Troy Young, who are some other cornerbacks? Christian right. Roland Wallace, yeah. Who's an incoming freshman. I mean, they have some guys that they could use.
I think that they realized that was a position that needed to be addressed, right? So they added two really impressive-looking freshmen in Christian Roland Wallace and Bobby Wolf to that group. You bring back Jace Whitaker, healthy now. Lorenzo Burns entering his third year as a starter. Mackenzie Barnes.
Forgot about him.
Like one of the stars of the spring game with a pair of interceptions. And Troy Young. So I think those are your six guys, probably, your main six. And I threw in this stat the other day when I was writing about Jace Whitaker. Back in 2017, both he and Lorenzo Burns played over 950 snaps apiece.
Wow.
In a 13-game season, which comes out to like about 75 plays a game. There was no other corner on the team who had as many as 100 snaps over the entire season. Okay. That you can't play that way in the Pac-12. You just can't. There are too many up-tempo offenses, too many teams that throw the ball all over the yard. I think much like defensive tackle that they need to develop a legitimate and real rotation at that spot. And I think that Mackenzie Barnes and Christian Roland Wallace are the most likely candidates to be that second unit. I feel like Bobby Wolf, he's still a little on the light side like maybe he's a little bit of a developmental project.
He's got
maybe
a good frame though.
He does. He's long. Yeah. So maybe he's the fifth corner. Use him on special teams. You know, bring him along slowly that way. But I really like the depth at that position. And you mentioned how they seemed like they had an abundance of safeties and a shortage of corners. I think they shifted some resources around and realized that that was the case. Christian Young, you know, filled in at corner last year. I think he's going to play that bandit position this year, the one that Demetrius Flanagan Fowles used to play. And there's some, you know, there's some crossover as far as the training goes and what those guys are asked to do. I mean, the spur position, the one that Dane Cruikshank played and now is Tristan Cooper, not as much man coverage on the outside. You're kind of like right next to the defensive end often in that position. But I think the other safeties, you got to cover, right? So whether you're called a corner or called a safety, there's a lot of coverage responsibilities for all of those defensive backs.
But you look at the safety position, mention Christian Young. But then you also have guys like Jarius Wallace and Scotty Young Jr. And who else am I missing? I thought one guy, he comes from a powerhouse high school that I'm surprised isn't really getting talked about. It's Xavier Bell, who looks the part. He's cut. He looks like a big guy.
Yeah, I think he's in the mix.
Yeah.
Probably.
But I saw Tristan Cooper get more reps than him.
Yeah, probably the number two spur.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they've been talking about for years, going back to the Rich Rod days, about wanting to rotate more at all the positions. And I think it's really important. It's to stay fresh and to have, you know, alternatives if guys get hurt, guys get tired. I mean, it's going to be muggy in Hawaii, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably more so than here. It's hot here, as you know, but it's a different when you get into when there's humidity involved. So I think it's going to be really important for them to rotate on defense in that game. Remember the Houston game last year? Guys were cramping up and had to come out, which was just one of myriad problems that they had that particular day. You know, it's just you have to have depth on defense, especially. I don't think you have to have depth at offensive line as far as in-game rotating. Like, you obviously want to have depth in your program. You want to have depth in case injuries happen. But for the most part, like, five offensive linemen are going to play the whole game. Wide receiver, they probably are going to rotate this year, but you don't have to have, like, 8 to 10 guys playing in a game, right? You have to have it on defense because you got to run and chase on every single play. So I think they're trending in that direction at a lot of positions, which is an encouraging sign.
Lev, who is an offensive player that caught your attention over the last two practices? I know we didn't see team reps. We didn't get to see that part of it, but we did get to see individuals. We did get to see quarterbacks throw to wide receivers. And I'm going to go ahead and get this started. I was actually kind of impressed with Jamari Joyner. He looks the part. He looks like a wide receiver. He looks like a guy that could step in and I'm not start, but at least be in the rotation because you still have to make that adjustment. But if you're switching positions, I think he's further ahead than maybe a guy switching from running back to wide receiver because he's a quarterback. He knows every single position in the offense. And Kevin Sumlin said that on Friday. He said, Jamari, you know, before he was lining up everybody, he was putting guys in their right spots. And now that he's getting reps on wide receivers, he knows where to line up right away.
That was the guy I was going to mention. You know, there's been a lot of talk, concern about the wide receiver position because they obviously lost, you know, all of their most productive guys from last year. Sean Poindexter, Tony Ellison, Sean Brown. Then they lost Devon Cooper, as well. But if you look at what that position looks like in terms of both quantity and size, like, it's an impressive looking group. Like, they have brought in a lot of receivers who are 6'2", 6'3". I mean, Booby Curry looks like he could play, immediately. Thomas Marcus, Jalen Johnson, like, really, again, like, really impressive physique. Now, you know, it's one thing to watch them catch balls against air, as they say. It's another thing when they're actually lined up against defensive backs who might have some idea of what they're going to do, you know, breaking the jam at the line or, you know, breaking free from guys who are older and savvier than they are, but an impressive looking group. And yeah, Jamari looks natural to me. Like, he's catching the ball with his hands. His routes, you know, again, against air, seem like they're on point. Doesn't seem like there have been a lot of discussions between him and quarterbacks like, oh, you were supposed to do this or you're supposed to do that. Now, again, when there's a whole defense out there and you have to read what the defense is doing and make the right decision, maybe on an option route or, you know, break free from someone who's, you know, shoving his hands into your chest at the line of scrimmage, that's maybe a different story. But I think he's off to an encouraging start.
Outside of Jamari Joyner, you mentioned Thomas Marcus and Booby Curry. Are there other wide receivers that caught your attention over the last 2 days of practice?
Well, I mean, it was nice to see.
It's hard. It's hard because, like you said, it's air.
Yeah, it was nice to see Stanley Berryhill back in the mix. Yeah. You know, he didn't participate in spring team drills at all because he was rehabbing an injury. So, I mean, I think he's going to be someone who's a factor at slot receiver. And the other guy is Brian Castile. I was talking to someone who said that in last year's camp, they thought Brian Castile was a real breakout candidate. Then he got injured, missed the entire season. And then in the off season, he lost a lot of weight. He went from, I think, maybe 210 to 195 or something like that.
Still looks pretty stocky,
though. Well, he's a thick-bodied guy. Like, he looks more like a running back. But, you know, I remember Theron H. talking in the offseason about how much of a difference it was in terms of his quickness, you know, which if you're going to play on the inside, you're either one of two body types. You're that kind of that small classic slot receiver, or you're the big slot. Kind of like, remember Marcus Colston of the Saints was the big slot. Well, Brian Castile is that smaller, quicker, more classic slot. And I remember I was listening to a podcast, Ryan Russillo's podcast. Trent Dilfer was on. I love Trent. Like,
Dilfer's gone.
The smartest guy, the smartest guy out there. And he said that the most important trait for receiver these days was twitch. Wasn't speed, wasn't necessarily quickness, it was twitchiness. And I don't think if you're like a little bit overweight,
like
that
upper body twitch?
No, in terms of like shiftiness,
okay,
you know, being stick your foot in the ground and elude someone who's trying to cover you, niftiness. I think if you're a little bit overweight, that it's kind of hard to be that. I mean, not everybody can be like Zion Williamson, you know, like some sort of like genetic freak. So I think it's a good sign for the offense and for Brian, who you know, he's gotten himself into his body into the right into the shape it needs to be for him to be an effective slot receiver.
2 days of Arizona football training camp already in the books. Still got this week. Make sure you follow this man on Twitter, Michael Lev, at Michael J. Lev. He's providing the goods on Arizona football. You can also check out his content on the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. Download it. It's free. Get on the App Store and Google Play, and also subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Lev, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.